Hi, today is October 4th, 2020. This is Movies Podcast 334. I'm Todd Agassi-Ward, my good friend John Westfall. Not sure how long this podcast is going to be. Maybe not too long, but that's okay.
I mean, it's good that we've done now 3 weeks in a row. I think we are back from our hiatus that we took. So that is good.
After missing it for 3 months in a row, or something near that. So kind of getting back in the swing. I'm still having a hard time remembering how to do things. But it's pretty funny what you can forget in just a few months, you know? Just those brain cells just go, boop, nope, I don't know what you're talking about. Okay, so item number one. This is just a quick one because I thought it was kind of interesting. It's one of those Google proof of concept type of things. And gosh, I can't remember what it's called. Oh, yes, Google Tone Transfer. So you go to sites.research.google. .google is the end, by the way. There's no .com. sites.research.google/tone transfer. And you can basically take your voice or an instrument, or they provide you with some samples and turn it into something else. It's a lot of fun. What it doesn't do, however, is auto-tune you. And for some of you, if you're like me, you probably need it to actually produce a reasonable test. And it doesn't, it doesn't basically anti-alias your stuff either, which is, you know, sort of like auto-tuning, except not quite as powerful. But at any rate, go. It's kind of fun to play with. Although I think very few of us are brave enough to actually show our results, because I could definitely use auto-tuning. just trying to hum a tune, kind of thing. All right. Now, you know, I bought a Google Pixel 4a a couple of months ago. Very happy with the phone. It's a great phone at a wonderful price, $349. Not too much cognitive dissonance in the purchase. But Google announced the Pixel 4a 5G, which is different. I thought it was only going to be different from my phone in that it has 5G radio frequencies. And the Pixel 5, but no, I was wrong. It has a couple of interesting features. First of all, it has two camera features I do not have. It has something called Cinematic Pan, where I guess you can pan your view and get a panoramic view. And it has ultrawide lens, like the iPhone 11 Pro does. And I would really like ultrawide. I have ultrawide on my iPad Pro 2020, but you know, iPad Pro is not something you wander around and take panoramic views or wide angle views, so not really useful.
Yeah, probably not. I mean, you could, but people will probably watch you with amusement seeing you do that.
So. Oh, that said, you know, I remember, and this is a few years ago when my daughter was still in high school doing sports and things. I did see a lot of parents, mostly dads. In fact, I'm going to say they're all dads. I didn't see any moms doing this. It's a dad thing. A lot of dads are holding up iPads, taking videos of their child, which I found interesting because, well, you know, I just used a phone or a real camera, a real digital camera anyway. Mm-hmm. But at any rate, so I'm a little disappointed. I have just a slight amount of cognitive dissonance in me now going, eh. But you know what? They're a lot more expensive, a couple hundred dollars more. But they're a lot cheaper than the high-end anything else. You know, I think the Pixel 5 is coming in at like $650 or $750, which is very affordable. And, you know, compared to, say, $1,400 for iPhone Pro 11 or iPhone 11 Pro Max or something. And, but anyway, it does have one more feature that I don't have. And that is Hold For Me. And what Hold For Me does is if you're put on hold, you know, you call like a customer service thing and they put you on hold, it will tell you when a real human comes online and, you know, and takes you off of hold. So I kind of wish I had that feature.
Yeah, I looked at that and I wondered, so how often do you get put on hold?
Every time I call customer service anywhere.
I know, but the thing is, I have not been on customer service with anyone in probably 4 months.
Oh, I have.
And yeah, maybe I'm just blessed in that I don't have a lot of customer service issues, or web chat works surprisingly well for me.
Yeah.
But it's it looks like a cool feature, but with most of us doing less and less through telephone communication, I just wonder how often people actually use it.
Yeah, for me, it's just often enough that I'd like the feature. Mm-hmm. You know, I would say, how often does it happen to me? A couple times a year, I would say. You know, trying to schedule something for my car, or trying to get you know, the cable company or somebody like that to respond to an issue. In fact, we just had an outage, a regional outage, like, I don't know, a month or two ago, maybe less. And I was working from home that day, and I really would have appreciated then. I will say the local cable company does have a feature where it says, we'll call you back, but, and they do. So I won't say I don't trust it, but I'd rather just, you know, talk to someone as soon as possible. By the way, one thing that the Pixel 5, which is the high-end phone, doesn't have, the 4A 5G does. The Pixel 5 doesn't have a 3.5mm headphone jack. And my 4A and the 4A 5G both do. Mine for sure does. I won't say I use it a lot or even at all, because I've got a bunch of USB-C headphones now. You know, ever since I think a Pixel 2 didn't have a 3.5mm jack either. And so I picked up a couple of USB-C headphones. So it's not a huge problem. And I guess most people, unlike me, still use Bluetooth. We can talk about Bluetooth headsets later and my issues with them. But yeah, so I kind of wish I had the 4A 5G. Not for the 5G part, but just for the new camera features. But we'll see. We'll see.
It is interesting that the 4A 5G has a slightly larger screen than mm-hmm. the 5. Mm-hmm. Slightly smaller battery, slightly larger screen. Just an interesting thing to have both of those released at the same time in parallel, because they're roughly equivalent when you average that out, with the exception of wireless charging. I guess that would be something if you have invested in wireless charging already, say you're switching from an iPhone or something like that, you would want to have the 5 for the wireless charging feature.
But, yeah, I don't think my 4A has wireless charging. Yeah. As well, I should say. So, but I think that, no, the Nexus had, I think the Nexus had wireless charging, Nexus 6, but that was the last Google phone I had that has wireless charging. Okay, next up. I don't know how interested you are in this. I was kind of moderately interested, and that's the Microsoft Surface Laptop Go, which is an Intel-based, not to be confused with the X series, which is the ARM-based, the incredibly expensive ARM-based devices that I don't see any use for. But the reason I was interested in Microsoft Surface Laptop Go is that it starts at $549, which is, you know, a reasonably affordable price, I think. But for what you get, for $549, you know, it's like 4 gigs of RAM and 64 gigs of storage. Mm-hmm. And what was the processor? It was an i5, right? I think it was an i5. It was a pretty nice processor, but I just don't see the point. I mean, it's going to run Windows 10, I mean, normal Windows 10, so it's not like the X running the ARM, you know, WOA, the ARM version of Windows, but it's just going to hobble you. For $549, you can get a really, really nice Chromebook these days, if you can find one. You know, mm-hmm. The problem with Chromebooks is it's not so much the price right now, it's just being able to find it, because educational institutions are just scooping them up as fast as they can be made. I don't know. You have any thoughts on the Surface Laptop Go besides, you know?
It's probably going to be my go-to recommendation when someone says, I want an inexpensive laptop.
Running Windows.
Because I still don't quite trust a lot of the third-party OEMs, just because they've done so many things that have left bad taste in my mouth over the years, with including bundled crapware that I have to uninstall when I support a computer and stuff like that. I like the idea of, I can tell people, buy, if you want a device running macOS, get yourself a MacBook Air for your entry level, and if you want Windows, you know, go with this for your entry level. Yeah. I think that's really what it would work out for me.
Yeah, I kind of would like to see it running in front of me, you know, doing stuff, you know, like having 5 or 6 tabs in a browser open, that sort of thing. But, and, you know, with, I don't know, Outlook or Microsoft Teams fat gland running, but not curious enough to go buy one. If I were going to spend $550, I'd buy another Chromebook for myself anyway. And I do have a really reasonably nice Microsoft laptop. It's not great, but you know, I think it's got 8 or 12 gigs of RAM and all of that. And didn't cost that much more. I paid maybe $650 on sale. So $100 more. And I think it has, does it have 256 gigabytes of storage or 512? Anyway, a lot more than 64 gigs. So, interesting. Okay, next. I assume we're like, today's the 4th, October the 4th. I assume we're like maybe 2 weeks away from some kind of Apple announcement. Maybe
yep,
less.
The rumored date is still the 13th. So hopefully this Tuesday, if Apple stays true to form, they'll announce that it'll be next Tuesday or maybe Wednesday to Tuesday or something like that. But that's what all the rumors are still pointing at.
Yeah, so I have an iPhone XS. I guess I have a XS or whatever came before the 11. So I've you know, my phone is actually, it went out of warranty like a week and a half ago because Apple's a little late on their announcements and releases this year. So mine it's a little over 2 years old, and I tend to replace it every 2 years. So I'm kind of looking forward to getting ultra wide and the night sight or whatever the Apple calls their version of that, the version in Android. Pixel 4A works great. Actually worked great on the 2 as well. So a couple of things I thought was interesting is that, well, and this doesn't matter to me because I don't have 5G, but it says the iPhone 12 models will be the first iPhones to feature 12 5G connectivity. I'm not sure that makes any difference to me because I think, or does it make it? Sprint might have 5G downtown, but nowhere else. And I have I have Google Fi, which uses the old Sprint plus T-Mobile, which is now the same company. So maybe when I'm downtown, it would make a difference, but not near where I live. And they'll have LiDAR, like the iPad 20 Pro 2020, which I have still not found a use for. But I'm hoping that more developers will, you know, build for LiDAR now that it'll be in a more popular device. Oh, I'm getting beeping sounds, but I don't know where it's coming from.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody trying to call
us? You had dropped out for a second there, so I think we're back.
Oh, okay. Oh, maybe that beeping is me dropping in and out. That's interesting. Or one of us dropping in and out. And so LiDAR is kind of interesting. All the phones will have 6 gigs of RAM, which is kind of interesting and nice. There'll also be the first phones to ship without earphones and chargers. So they'll have a charging cable, but no chargers. This is just like the new Apple Watch, which ships with a charger cable, but no charger itself. And that's, you know, for most of us who are already in the ecosystem, that's not a big deal. If you're switching from Android, it might be a minor deal, but you probably have a USB charger somewhere. And all you need is like a USB-A to, you know, USB-C. Oh, actually, are they USB-C? I don't even know if the 12 is going to have USB-C ports. Did the 11 Pro have USB-C? I can't remember. It did, right?
Nope. Everything's still Lightning.
Oh,
the
okay.
The only thing Apple has that are USB-C are the iPad Pros, the new iPad Air, and MacBooks are the only things that use USB-C right now.
Oh, yeah. My MacBook Pro has a USB-C, which I am very grateful for. So, yeah. So, LiDAR, more RAM. You know, for me, it'll be a big upgrade. You know, like we're talking about me going from a Series 3 watch to a Series 6 watch. It's a huge difference in functionality. And similarly, going from a 10S to a 12, you know, if I get the version 12, all this stuff. Yeah, go ahead.
I'm excited to do it as well because I'm planning on going from a 10 to a 12 Pro.
Oh.
So that's going to give me a substantial camera upgrade.
Yeah. Yeah, although the 10 has a wonderful camera.
It does. It really, that's why I've been able to stick on it for as long as I have.
Yeah.
But I do know it is about time to upgrade because my poor 12 South book case, wallet case, is about falling apart because I've used it for 3 years now. So it is about time for an upgrade. But it is a good testament to the longevity of these phones now. I never would have thought I could have gone 3 years between phone upgrades in the past. 2 years was just always seen as the norm.
Yeah.
And this one, quite a bit longer.
Yep. And for me, I went from a 3A to a 4A on my Android side in 1 year because I thought the 4A was a big enough of an upgrade for me. Well, mostly I needed more storage. The 3A I have is only 64 gigs, and 64 gigs is just not enough if you're taking photos. Yeah.
So what are you planning? Which iPhone 12 are you planning to go?
Yeah, so I want, well, first of all, I need to read the specs for all of them, but basically I want the one that has a camera with the features I want. And so we know they all have LiDAR, and I kind of want that even though I have no use for it yet. I figure I will eventually. I definitely want a phone that supports the wide angle and the night sight. So I'm really, whichever one doesn't gets eliminated. I suspect it will be not the Max because I just don't want a giant screen. So assuming the 12 Pro, not Max, or whatever they call it, assuming the 12 Pro that's not the Max, not with a giant screen, has all the camera features I want, that's the one I'll get. So I'll get the middle one.
Yeah. And that's exactly what I'm thinking. The only thing that will get me off of that is if there's a camera feature that's only on the Max and not on the Pro.
Exactly. Same here.
And I really hope Apple doesn't do that because I have enough devices that I have bigger screens whenever I need them. Mm-hmm. I tend to travel with my iPad Pro 11-inch regularly, so I don't really need a bigger screen. But that being said, if that did happen, I wouldn't be annoyed too much at having the Max because I used to have the iPhone, 6 Max and 7 Max, whatever they called them when they were the bigger versions back then.
Yeah.
Those might have been the pros at that point. So it wouldn't be too annoying, but at the same point, I kind of liked it. When I got my iPhone 10, I was happier to get a slightly smaller screen. And I really do like the idea of a mini for people who really want a small pocketable device.
Or if you have small hands,
Yeah.
Or you have, take up so much space. If you have some kind of limited motion, like arthritis or something, a smaller phone would probably be much more comfortable to hold.
The way you were holding up your hand there for a moment, I thought you were going to say, if you have claws instead of a hand.
Well, if your arthritis is severe enough, your hands are essentially claws. Yeah. So, I would just
if look. You are a crab, you might want the...
You are a crab or a lobster. I was going to say, I've got the 256 gigabyte iPhone XS, and I'm just looking at how much space I've used. And I've got a lot left. It says I have 196 gigabytes free out of that. So I'm debating, it says the new iPhones, unlike the old ones, don't start at 64. They start at 128. So I may be able to get by with a lower end one. Of course, I've done that twice in my life already, and that was just a bad idea. So those are with my various iPads where I went low and I said, oh yeah, that wasn't real smart of you, Todd.
I have to think about it. I'm looking now too because I'm curious what my usage is to see if I need to go to the 256 or if I can stay with if I can go to the 128.
Yeah. I wonder also, because presumably we probably won't be traveling as much as we used to. I don't know, maybe you might, John. Your part of the country might recover a little faster. And you can drive to places, which I can't really do. Well, I could, but I'd be in the middle of the ocean, so that wouldn't work out well at all. You might be taking a lot more photos, wide-angle photos, than I am. But I'm wondering if I will, if the wide-angle... And I'm stuttering now. So I was going to say, my daughter has the 11 Pro and has had it since last year. And when it came out, and her ultra-wide photos are just remarkable. I mean, it is such a nice camera feature to have. I'm just wondering if I'm just going to go hog wild on it, The other thing that changes is in the iPhone 12, for me, going from a XS to a 12 Pro, presumably, is that my XS does not have night mode. And so I don't take pictures in dim light much. I have a Pixel 4, and a 4A and a 3A before that for that, which takes wonderful low light pictures. But I wonder if I'll use my iPhone camera even more now that I can do two things that I can't do now, which is low light and ultra wide. So maybe I should go 256 just in case I go a little photo wild on it.
Yeah, I haven't decided yet myself. I did just look. I'm using 87 gigs.
Yeah.
So I'd have to really start using a lot more to get up to where I would need the 256. But if the pricing is correct and it's $100 more,
yeah,
maybe I would go for it.
Yeah, I think that's a really good decision tree, and it's probably one I'll follow, probably. As I often do when I talk to you about these things, I'll probably follow your lead on that one. So I'm really mm-hmm. looking forward to all of this. And, you know, when that's enough space that you don't have to use the offload unused apps feature at all. You just keep it all there. So, mm-hmm. which is what I do with my 256. And even, you know, I'm saying, you know, reviews large attachments. It says I can save 485.7 megabytes of space. But I got so much space, I don't care about half a gig.
Mm-hmm.
And so maybe you're right. I think you're right. 256 gigs is probably the way to go, regardless of how much space we're currently using. I was just reading one more thing about this. You know, it doesn't come with a charger, but it does come with a braided charging cable. So, you know, for those of you who've used braided cables, they really do seem to last better, longer than mm-hmm. the unbraided ones. So, a little bit there.
What I would really like, and this is going to be kind of a pipe dream wish, but I did it earlier this week because I remembered I could do it. If the new iPhone supports USB-C, that would be great. I would not mind moving everything to USB-C off of Lightning.
Mm-hmm.
But earlier this week, I had to take a meeting, and I was kicked out of my office for cleaning while the meeting was going on. There had been a COVID case a few days earlier, and they had realized that the person that had tested positive had been in our building. They hadn't been in the building for 3 or 4 days, but they wanted to do a deep cleaning of the building anyway.
Yeah.
And so I literally went outside while I was on a meeting. I went over onto my phone and did Zoom on my phone. And as I was sitting on a bench in our university's quad taking my meeting, I realized, my iPhone is getting low on charge. And then I realized my iPad can charge my iPhone through USB-C because the iPad Pro can charge an iPad or an iPhone. So I hooked that up, and that's how I was able to take the rest of the meeting by charging the iPhone. So it would be nice to have USB-C on the iPhone and be able to use your iPhone as an external power brick.
Yeah.
If you know you've got other devices that need a little bit of a top off. That would be a really nice feature to have to avoid ever having to carry an external brick just day to day.
Yeah. This BGR article that I've been using as reference for these, and I assume they're rumors because I don't think we've seen any announcements, but the BGR article says that the braided cable is a Lightning to USB-C. So what does that mean? It means that the Lightning goes into the iPhone, but the USB-C goes into the charger receptacle? That mm-hmm. kind of sounds like what it is, huh? Yeah.
Perhaps. We'll have to see.
Yeah. We'll have to USB-C. Yeah. Rumors, like you said, rumors the event could take place on October 13th. Is that next week Tuesday? I'm looking.
Nope. 2 weeks.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So 2 Tuesdays from now. And at least, and again, reading from the BGR article, which I will link in our show notes, it says at least some iPhone 12 models would be released on October 23rd. Some reports suggest that the Pro and Pro Max models could see further delays to sometime in November, so we could be waiting a while for that. But, that's okay, except that my iPhone is out of warranty. Yeah.
I got so much time, I can deal with a couple extra weeks.
Well,
I'm still permanently kind of stuck at March, so what's a couple extra weeks at this point,
Well, you know, some of us are older than you, John, and we don't know how much longer we've got. You know, every week counts. Every single week counts. All right, where are we? I think we're getting fairly near the... Oh, actually, no, because you've got some interesting stuff you added also.
I have two interesting things. The first is a feature that I had forgotten about on my Apple Watch because I hadn't enabled it in a while. And I thought you might have forgotten about it as well. And that's
I never knew about it.
Time. Yeah, so Taptic Time is a feature you can enable in the clock settings on your Apple Watch.
Okay, I'm looking
And what it does is when your watch is on non-silent mode and you tap two fingers down and hold, it'll tell you the time.
Huh.
But if it's on silent mode, it'll actually give you the time through a series of vibrations.
I like it.
So a long... a long vibration for the tens unit, and then a short vibration for the ones unit, and then it does, you know, the time and then the minutes. So right now, as we record this, it's 2:30 my time, so that means if I do it, I will get two long vibrations to tell me that it's 2 o'clock, or two short, something like that. And then I'll get three long vibrations to tell me that it's 30, you know, past the hour. So that is, it's a cool little feature for when you just need to know the time, but you don't want to be visibly looking at your watch and showing people that you're, you know, bored or whatever. Now, of course, the always on feature of the Apple Watch Series 6 and 5 does help this a little bit because you can, you don't have to move your hand in such a way that it turns on the phone.
Turns
on the watch.
You say that turn on in clock area of settings. So you do it on your watch?
Or setting,
of the
you
watch?
You do it on either.
Either one? Okay.
So go to the watch app on your phone.
Okay.
Choose clock. And then it's the fourth option or so down, tap tick time.
I don't see clock. Where's clock? Is it under general? Oh, no, clock. Clock
no,
is its own thing.
It's okay. In the top level.
Okay. And then we're... Oh, tap tick time. I see it. Okay. You got kind of two-thirds of the way down, and you turn it on. Oh, I see. So digits, terse, and Morse code. What's terse?
It'll tell you when you do it. So long tap for every 5 hours, then short tap for the remaining hours, then a long tap for a quarter hour. So if you don't want the precise, you can do that.
I see. Long tap. Well, I'm going to try it on mine. How do I? Is it set now? Let me see. So you just long tap your watch?
You have to hold two fingers down and just hold them on there. So tap and hold two fingers.
Okay. Oh, yeah. That's interesting. That's really interesting. I like it. You know,
And there are a ton of other random features. You know, if you haven't ever spent time on both your iPhone and your Apple Watch looking at the accessibility features,
they really are
worth a run through, because there are a ton of features Apple's built in there that customize how you interact with your device. You do not need to have any sort of accessibility limitation to make use of the accessibility shortcuts in iOS. I think for so many of us, if you are fortunate to not have any accessibility issues, you go, well, that whole menu, I don't need to worry about that. But there's some cool stuff hiding in the accessibility features.
Right. Absolutely right. And also the thing to remember, worth learning, is, you know, as you get older, accessibility issues you did not have when you were younger will start appearing, or may start appearing. So it's good to know about this, you know, before you need to go frantically searching to see a way to solve some accessibility issue you want to solve. So, yeah, I definitely need to spend more time in there. You know, I also wanted to mention, speaking of the watch, you know, I forgot, because I had a 3 for so long, that I missed out on all the new watch faces in the 4 and 5. And so when I looked at the watch face list in the 6, which added even more watch faces, it was a really pleasant surprise to see the you know, optional watch faces that are available. I'm using something called Infograph Modular now that shows sort of a 5-hour weather, and it shows, I still don't know what CUP is, C-U-P. I got to go look that up. Activity, temperature.
That is the time zone. That's the world clock entry for Cupertino.
Oh, thank you. So it's not CUP, it's COOP.
Yeah, so if you change that, you'll be able to change that to whatever city you would like it to track.
Yes, and of course, from Apple's point of view, Cupertino is the center of the universe, so I get it.
Yes.
Anyway, I'm very pleased to finally be able to try some of these watch faces that I have admired from afar. I can now admire from anear.
Similar thing. I usually use the California watch face for the weekends.
Yeah.
When I just want a nice, simple, clean watch face. And then during the week, I'll use one of the Infographic, or I'll use a Modular or something like that at that point. But,
yeah.
Then I did go through and use the favorites feature in Apple Photos. I had never really done that before. So that I do now have my favorite photos tagged, and I can use the watch face that just cycles a favorite photo. So that's kind of fun for weekends or other times when I just want a nice, clean watch face.
For the last 3 years, that has been my default watch face, favorite photos. I have like 5 or 6 photos that I cycle through there. And so this is the first time I've really changed to another watch face for any significant period of time. You know, I've played with a couple of watch faces, but they were like, you know, an hour or 2 hours, maybe half a day. But I've had this on for about a week now, and I kind of like it. Maybe less than a week, because I only remembered I had new watch faces a few days after I got the watch. But at any rate. Anyhow, you have more stuff that you wanted to talk about, and I have some of my own opinions.
Yeah, this was just sort of, so along the same lines, as I said, you know, one of the nice things about the feature we just talked about, Taptic Time, is that it avoids that awkwardness of when you are trying to know what time it is, but you don't want to show everyone in the world that you're bored, and so you're checking your time and that sort of thing. And the reason why I brought that up is it's interesting that phone etiquette and watch etiquette and device etiquette seem to be changing regularly.
Absolutely.
A couple of examples I had were, you know, when I'm at lunch now, my friends and I, we eat lunch in a socially distant way in that we're as far apart from each other as possible in the room. And we eat our lunches, and then at some point it kind of devolves down to everyone's checking their phone.
Yeah.
You know, a conversation ends and everyone, you look around, everyone's got their phone out. And that seems to be an accepted thing now, whereas it's not, you know, people don't look at you like, oh, well, I guess it's not, you know, you're going to look at your phone now or something like that. People just are, that's sort of where they're at with that. And, you know, you see people pulling out their phones and checking in a bunch of different places, meetings. And even my favorite is when you're in a meeting with someone and you get an email from that person on a completely unrelated measure because they're catching up on email while they're also, you know, in the meeting that you're in. And that seems to be an accepted thing now where you're basically broadcasting, hey, I'm not paying attention to the meeting I'm catching up on work.
Yeah.
That seems really interesting to me. And finally, you know, I used to go out of my way. I'd actually put these large digital clocks behind where people sit in my offices so that no one ever thinks that I'm, you know, not paying attention to them when I need to check the time. But I'm wondering if that's even essential anymore or if that's that's not so much. So what are your thoughts on device etiquette these days?
Yeah, well, first, you know, the thing about looking at your watch or phone as a signal that you're bored, I don't think that's always true. I think that, you know, if you adopt a certain posture and certain attitude on your face, you're just saying, hey, I'm really important, you know? And, you know, you're taking up a lot of my valuable time, so I need to multitask while you're chit-chatting with me. But yeah, you know, it has really changed a lot. I was just thinking back 25, 30 years ago when the first portable laptops, and by that I mean, you know, John, you might be old enough to remember the original laptops or portable computers were really transportable computers. It was possible to move them. It wasn't really easy. But when the first truly portable laptops came around that, you know, we're small and light enough that you'd carry them to a meeting. I remember being, you know, one of the early adopters for that. I mean, you know, this is 30 years ago, right? So I remember being one of the early adopters, and I'd carry my Toshiba or my TI, you know, 4-pounder or 5-pounder, which was tiny back then, if you recall. Well, that's not true. It wasn't 4 or 5. Probably was more like 6 or 7 pounds. And I'd take it to meetings, and I'd get reprimanded, like, hey, are you paying attention? Yeah, I'm taking notes.
Mm-hmm.
You know? I says, here, this is what you just said.
Yeah.
Are you paying attention? That's what you just said. I took note of that.
I wrote that down.
Yeah. But now, this is the turnabout, right? So 25, 30 years later, if I see somebody come into a meeting without a notebook, you know, my question to them is, do you have eidetic memory? Can you remember everything I say?
Yeah, are you paying attention?
Yeah.
Yeah, that is the funny way it's shifted.
Yeah. So, you know, it's a shift in expectations over the last couple of decades. It's quite remarkable. The other thing that I wonder now, so, you know, now that we're, you know, you and I have been meeting like this for years now over Skype. And, you know, you use Zoom and other kinds of video conferencing services now. Now that we're all doing it all the time, I had a 6-hour one yesterday, which, no, I'm sorry, Friday, oh, which was, yeah, painful. You know, now that we're all having these meetings, and, you know, some people have the, this is the other thing we can talk about maybe in another podcast, is whether you turn your camera on or not. Now, John and I turn our cameras on so we can see each other, and I think it allows us to have a little bit better visual feedback and cues on when somebody wants to say something, you know, and we want to just kind of keep the conversation flowing. But in large, I've been turning off my camera. You know, you really don't need to see me all the time. If I'm the main speaker, I will turn my camera on. But if I am sort of a auxiliary person in a meeting and I'm there to mostly listen and occasionally chime in, I generally turn my camera off unless I need to say something at length. Like, you know, like if I were making an expository statement like this. So I wonder now, and, you know, people know, they're getting emails from me, just like you said, during, you know, in our case, it's mostly Teams, but also WebEx and Google Meet and whatever else we're using with various entities. They're getting emails from me on various things, and it's almost the opposite of am I bored? It's telling them, hey, I'm doing stuff even if I'm not saying anything.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's the other thing. Not that I need to tell them I'm doing stuff, but hey, you know, just because I'm quiet doesn't mean I'm taking a nap.
Well, it is interesting to think about the video, you know, video on or video off, because yeah, most of my students, if they have the choice, they will not turn on their video. And it's somewhat distracting, and it's kind of hard to teach to at times.
I can imagine.
Of course, that also means that I did something a couple weeks ago I have not done, and I'm teaching these courses in what's called a high flex arrangement, where I've got some students in the room and I've got some students on Zoom, and the Zoom students were not being very talkative, so I just started cold calling.
Yeah.
And, you know, saying so and so, you know, this and that, you know, right, time honored practice in business schools and law schools. And I caught a number of students that were either too scared to unmute or not paying attention. And, you know, that's kind of the perils of it. If they'd had their video on, then I probably might have, you know, I would have realized if they were paying attention or not, and I might, yeah, not have called them if they weren't paying attention. But without video, who knows?
You know, I was just thinking, it's too bad we don't have built-in response timers on these video conference calls, so that, you know, you would press a button, like, or click a button, like the moment you call on somebody, and then you time how long it takes them to respond, and then you can critique them, you know, on their response and correlate it with their time to respond. It'd be just a fun study, I'm just saying.
Well, remember that up until earlier this year, Zoom allowed you to unmute someone.
Yeah.
Without their consent, you could just unmute them, which was a great feature, you know, for meeting coordination.
Yeah.
But once a lot more people started using Zoom, they said, well, we need to have you can now prompt people to unmute, but you can't unmute them. But that did lead to some interesting things where you could cold call someone, prompt it, just unmute them. And if they're talking to someone else or listening to something,
yeah,
else, well, you learn about that real quick.
Yeah, Teams just got that feature, if you will, where you can mute someone, but you can't unmute them. Mm-hmm. I think, that's kind of interesting. But yeah, so when you say the hybrid thing, you say, whatever the term you use, so some students are physically in the class at some socially distant point in the class, and the rest are all in Zoom. Is that how it works? That's interesting.
Yep, and then there's actually a third option where students can choose to be completely online asynchronous. So, and students can swap week to week.
Huh.
So each week they choose what they want to do, so that if there's certain material that they want to be in class for, they can. If there's certain material they want to be remote for, they can. If there's certain material they just would rather do on their own, they can do that as well.
And do you record the lectures so that they can review the asynchronous can review the lectures? Interesting.
Yep, everything gets recorded, so you can, but of course, if you're asynchronous, then you have extra work to do because you weren't in class, so you weren't participating in our discussion, you weren't active, so you do have to do an additional level of work that the other students don't have.
To make up for the participation point, so to speak. Yeah. Interesting. Yeah, and this is not too much of a digression, but I think it's on, I want to say HBO Max, wherever South Park is. South Park has a new, like, one-hour episode, I think, called South Park Pandemic Edition. And I just looked at the first few minutes, but one of the characters is on a Zoom. It's grade school, right? He's on a Zoom video class, and he starts stuttering to simulate sound issues. And then his picture freezes, but really he's just put a photo in front of his camera. And the teacher says, "Oh, I see you're having video problems again." And he goes off and does whatever he wants. So, anyway, very clever young student. Okay. I don't know. So I'm going to say it's these days. It's probably age dependent. But I think most people I know don't consider it rude to be checking the phone and stuff. It depends. You know, if the ranking member of the physical group present is anti-checking the phone during a meeting, then it's a problem. Otherwise, it's not a problem. That's kind of how I feel.
It's just interesting to think how it's evolving, and because the ranking members of meetings are getting older and older, or getting younger and younger in a sense.
Yep, and that's
or maybe they're the same, but you know, it's a different generation.
It is. You know, I was just thinking, you know, senior citizens 20 years ago had the internet, but probably were not internet savvy. Whereas now, you know, people are senior citizens or 40 20 years ago, and it's normal, at least for most of them. And, you know, in 20 years, when these same folks are in their 80s, it's still going to be normal. You know, maybe not all the new features, maybe not the holographic option in the iPhone, but, you know, everything else will be.
Well, and I think it's worthwhile thinking about how the senior citizens 20 years ago did not use the internet for their jobs.
Yes.
Whereas today, they most certainly did, at least at the tail end of their careers, have to use the internet in some way.
Yep. So it's an interesting thing, I think. I don't know what the term would be, gerontological technology or something like that. I think that's a fascinating area as an older person myself. And I'm really looking forward to, you know, the last years of my cohort's lives as we try to wend our way with doing things with technology that were really not possible 20 or 30 years ago, but are now not just possible, they're very common, you know, keeping in touch with friends like you. You know, you're not my age, but it's something that would have been very difficult except through letters and email and things 20, 30 years ago. So here we go. All right. Your next item. Okay. I got some answers to this one. Go ahead, John.
Okay. Well, the only other thing I had was just, as I mentioned, having ways to tell the time when someone else is taking up your time. And that was my big digital clock hack, where once I've told people about that, they go, "That's kind of genius," where in my offices, right where people sit that are visiting with me, behind them, I have a clock that's digital that also has a temperature gauge on it and stuff like that. But that's how, if I know I have to get a... you know, wrap something up, I can gently nudge them to wrap up.
Yeah. Well, you know, actually, I was thinking, you know, you being you, you might want to put like a very low amperage, low voltage tickler on the chair, and they'd start getting, you know, gentle, like, gentle, not vibrations, but gentle.
Yeah, it's now time to leave. Yeah. See, my problem is, some of the people that I know might enjoy that, and so they would just stay in my office longer. So it might not do exactly what I was hoping.
Or you could have one of those smell-o-vision things, and you know, they can release scents on based on a charge, and just have unpleasant scents released in their direction. But again, you might have some people enjoy those unpleasant scents. So I don't know. I was referring to your other point here, but is it anywhere not appropriate to check your phone? And my response to that is funerals. You know, that's...
Yeah, I hope that you're right about that. I really do. Thankfully, I've not been at a funeral in a number of years. So I have not had a chance to check this myself, but I am really hopeful that you're right, that funerals are still one place where people are not compulsively checking their phones.
That said, I have heard phones ring in funerals in the last couple of years. It's been What can you do? You can't yell at somebody at a funeral. You know, that's even more inappropriate. The best you can do is give them a, you know, evil eye. But aside from that, not much you can do.
Mm-hmm.
Alrighty, so I guess we're 2 weeks out for waiting for iPhone announcements. There are a bunch of Google announcements, which you kind of alluded to. We didn't talk about a whole bunch of new stuff because, frankly, they didn't interest me. You know, various Google, except for the phones, which I'm not going to buy, but still interests me. Like I said, I'm still having a little bit cognitive dissonance buying the 4A now, but I'm getting over it. I'm trying to work my way through those feelings. Although I really would like the ultra wide. Okay. Got anything else, John?
I am good.
Okay. So that wraps up MoViews Podcast 334, and we'll talk to you next time. Hopefully not in another 3 months.
Yeah.